Fondation Radio. Our society has been wrecked by economic improprieties, political maneuvers, moral decadence, and debasing sociocultural practices. In the face of these vices, which have kept our society at the brink of collapse, constructive information remains the deal breaker. Join our formidable team of reporters on News Extra with incisive investigative reporting and analysis tailored to reshape our society and give it a moral face. News Extra is a production of the news service of Foundation Radio that uncovers striking societal concerns and demystifies them. Get the deepest understanding about economic, political, and sociocultural issues in News Extra. News Extra, your window to constructive criticism. Fondation Radio.
Hello there. This is another edition of News Extra on Fondation Radio FM 100. Yes, because it is News Extra, we go beyond the ordinary news into interviews, commentaries, and analysis. And because we are the voice of the voiceless, we give a microphone and let the people speak, all in one whole package that you can't afford to miss. In this edition, Priscilla Ninge, Lanza Vela, Wonja Leslie, Sir Edwin DiMaggio, Christopher Fogwe, and our intern Makebe Dretrude are all there ready to satisfy your listening aspirations. All these efforts may come to naught without the technical authority of Lawrence Banajai and Tendong Julius. For presentation, I am Mokun Johnny Nelson. Stay tuned. Two major news events clashed as the week ended. First was the release of the results of the 2016 session of the General Certificate of Education. And from all indications, the difficulties faced by candidates the previous years may have not been witnessed this year, apparently bound to pressure and criticisms, and in spite of his defended convictions, GCE Board Registrar Humphrey Ekema Monono had to abandon his deal with the mobile telephone company MTN that had the unhealthy and untrustworthy monopoly of releasing the results during the last two sessions. We want to say congratulations to the GCE Board, extending same to all students who made it. And for those who failed, remember that it's not the end of life. And remember the poem, "If you try and you don't succeed, try again, for only those who are capable of getting up succeed in this life that always has two faces." The mixed euphoria that surrounded the publication of the GCE results on Friday, July 29, 2016, may have eclipsed another breaking news, that of the arrest of the former general manager of CRTV, Amadou Vamuke. The former CRTV boss now sojourns alongside his predecessor Gervais Mendoza at the Yaoundé Kondenge Maximum Security Prison. As usual, Amadou Vamuke is accused of embezzling state funds while he reigned at CRTV. He is alleged to have siphoned about 2.8 billion francs of our money. Already, pundits say the government at the Yaoundé Kondenge Prison is near complete, from a prime minister to a secretary general at the presidency of the republic, through ministers and now a communication officer. What an interesting development. Rumors have it that other very top government officials have disturbing fires with the judiciary. But going by the Chinese proverb that a fish rots from the head down, then we may not doubt the origin of this pandemic of endemic corruption that has gripped our blessed country, Cameroon. This is News Extra on Foundation Radio. If you skipped any of our newscasts during the week, have no worries. Priscilla Ninge now has a retrospective of some of the major events both at the regional, national, and international scene in News Extra's Week in Retrospect.
The week began with expressions of satisfaction following the presence of Nijan Frunzi, the SDF chairman, at the funeral of his former Secretary General, Professor Tazocha Asongani. Both men were practically not on talking terms when the professor died on July the 3rd. That aside, it was the Northwest Follow-Up Committee for the Execution of Public Contracts that revealed that the execution rate midway into the financial year was only 45%. Honorable Awudumbaya Cyprian, chairman of that committee, has promised sanctioning defaulters. Still concerning the region, all 34 councils signed a convention with the National Community Driven Development Program, PNDP. The over 650 million francs agreement shall finance the ongoing decentralization process. Meeting in Tamulung, the Presbyterian Education Authority Teachers Trade Union, PIATU, decried the unhealthy relationship existing between the union and the authority of the Presbyterian Church in Cameroon. Out of the region, it was the National Communication Council that sanctioned a number of press organs. The Guardian Post and the media newspaper received warnings. Five students of Enam Yaoundé were dismissed for cheating during exams. And after the governor's meeting, it was agreed that illegal noise-making churches shall be closed down in the days ahead. The major news that concluded the week nationally was the announcement that 500,000 laptops shall be distributed to university students in both the public and private sector next academic year. Out of the country came the shocking news of a Malawian man who testified that though HIV positive, he accepted payment to have sex with children as young as 12 as part of initiation rites. He has since been arrested. In Indonesia, three Nigerians were executed for drug trafficking, while in Zimbabwe, President Robert Mugabe began a crackdown on war veterans who were opposing him. It was history in America as Hillary Clinton became the first woman to contest for the U.S. presidency. In sports, Young Sports Academy was knocked out of the 2016 Cup of Cameroon by Canon Yaoundé, as the country's under-20 Lions qualified for next year's championship in Zambia. A CAF delegation also assessed Cameroon's readiness to host this year's Female Football Championship. General Pierre Semenge was re-elected president of Cameroon's Football Professional League. He defeated Frank Happy by 26 votes against 7. Those were some of the major events of the week.
Straight to the point there, Priscilla Ninge. Students who enrolled into the university next academic year may be sure of benefiting from a stock of computers to be made available free of charge thanks to President Paul Biya's strange largesse. Christopher Fogwe is, however, afraid that endemic corrupt practices may sabotage this initiative.
President Paul Biya's decision to award 500,000 computers to all duly registered university students for the year 2016-2017 is very welcome indeed, given that they will serve very positively to enable the students to acquire or access knowledge and skills and to animate their creative potentials. The president's initiative is even more commendable because the computers are to be distributed to students studying both in public as well as private universities. This presidential gesture will, however, cost the state a whopping 75 billion francs CFA contracted as a loan from China's Exim Bank. The loan, which is to be paid over a period of 20 years, is nonetheless an additional burden on Cameroon's situation as the most indebted nation in Africa south of the Sahara. The Minister of Higher Education, Professor Jacques Famindongo, is charged with seeing to the distribution of the computers to deserving students. But who exactly shall be considered deserving students or beneficiaries of the presidential largesse? Given that there are not likely to be up to 500,000 students registered in all of our universities, one may suppose that some of the computers shall be awarded to other institutions of higher learning in which university-level education and professional training is obtainable. Given that the computers are exclusively intended for deserving students, and considering that all too often here in Cameroon, awards, grants, and benefits of this sort are diverted or misdirected and wind up in the wrong hands, and given that huge sums of state funds have been squandered on past youth projects such as the PAGEU and other spurious projects of that genre, which were catastrophically mismanaged, one has to wonder whether the president's computers will not also be wangled by opportunistic officials or scamming students. Some of the youths who obtained student loans from past projects disappeared and were never heard from again. What is to stop some whiz kids from getting registered, especially into state universities which cost much less to enroll into, to also register simply for the purpose of obtaining a computer without showing proof of taking their studies seriously? On the other hand, what will happen to deserving students studying diligently for degrees which will subsequently be obtained from universities, but who are studying in schools considered to be non-approved for that purpose, and who will therefore be sidelined for reasons that can only be considered as discriminatory? There are many other questions inspired by past malpractices and prejudice that have resulted in either victimization or allocation of benefits to non-deserving candidates that can be raised. But for now, let us just suppose, hopefully, that this time around, the president's noble initiative will not be sabotaged by those he has appointed to implement his well-intended project of giving computers to our Android generation of students.
Daddy Chris, remember during his 2016 UDA message, President Paul Biya promised a 102 billion francs CFA package for a youth development fund. That too, we are still waiting. In any case, what are the impressions of the students and non-students on this presidential offer? Get this Vox Pop conducted by Wunja Leslie.
The decision to distribute the 500 laptops, as he has been a good president, right? So there's no problem with that. It's to improve our learning standard in Cameroon, because nowadays we cannot learn well without using computers.
The idea in March, but something the way if you want check to our one, something they will be more better than that one. Because why? People, the life of people, it be risky. First, Yaoundé to Bamenda, the road is not good. Secondly, Bamenda Bamenda womb. They don't know they fine. So if you want to want buy laptop and gun for student them, me for check what that one them first, because that one a be risky for the life of the people. And the money we see one more now people they go pay. Nobody go pay.
Well, as a student, it is a very positive move because it goes a long way to help the students, their research, whatever thing that concerns the educational system. It goes a long way to promote that. But to the people back in the quarters, those who will not look at this as a positive move, they will want to think of it as another burden that has been added onto them. So I look at it in two ways. To the students, very, 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 very good, very, very helpful to them. But if you, to the layman, I don't think the layman will look at it as something which is good.
Well, as for me, I think it's not necessary. There are other pressing issues like unemployment, youth go to university, when they're out, they don't have jobs, and the president is investing a lot of money in irrelevant things. It's not going to help us in any way.
It's a good idea bringing in 500,000 laptops for students. We all have realized that most students suffer from the effects of not having laptops. In the modern world, each student entering into the university is supposed to be having a laptop. He's supposed to own a laptop for himself or herself. But the question now lies where they are going, how they are going to handle this distribution. Because some people, we know it's Cameroon. People might want to fraud so as to get laptops. Somebody in the university of year two might decide to come back and go in for university year one so as to get a laptop. We all understand the situation of the country. So my own worry lies how the distribution is going to take place. That's my own worry.
Well, to me, I think the idea is good, but not notwithstanding, it would be good that we should first of all know his own idea of maybe giving the laptops to the university students.
What is for sure is that Mr. Bia is a master of unpredictable decisions only he alone can explain. During the last governor's meeting that held in Yaoundé about a fortnight ago, the regional chief executives were instructed to resume the crackdown on illegal and noise-making churches. Only about 47 churches have a legal presidential authorization to operate in Cameroon. Strangely, over 500 churches count for sinners or believers in the country. And in the following paper, Sir Edwin DiMaggio feels that the relaunching of this exercise that was first carried out in 2013 may be a welcome relief.
Administrative tolerance seems to be the concept under which churches operate nowadays. This has been the case since 1990, when multipartism was reinstated in Cameroon and the law on the freedom of associations enacted. If one were to go by the rules governing the setting up of churches in Cameroon, then churches that operate would need authorization from the President of the Republic and Head of State in order to go about their activities. Going by the statistics from the Ministry of Territorial Administration and Decentralization in the year 2013, only about 50 churches are duly authorized. Yet, churches sprout up in residential areas almost everywhere in town like mushrooms. It is there that you see a gorgeous-looking young man delivering biblical lectures to a scanty congregation, perturbing the solace of inhabitants of a particular quarter, thereby making them nervous. It is for this reason that I decided to go downtown and find out the opinion of others as to the fact that the Minister of Territorial Administration and Decentralization, René Emmanuel Sadi, instructed all 10 governors of the country to clamp down on churches that have not been authorized. And here is what they had to say in that regard.
My opinion is that we didn't close them. We get respect for local authorities. Even the Bible says, accept them. When Jesus we take coin, he talks, the coin that we face today, they say now Caesar. So he said, give what belongs to Caesar to Caesar. We'll give government respect for government. Close the church.
My opinion on that, I will lay much emphasis that closing down the churches all together wouldn't really be a good idea because going down to the Bible, which is our basic instruction before leaving this earth, as predefined by some scholars nowadays. But to me, I believe the word and it's through that word that we all are from, and the word itself needs us to understand that they are true prophets and they are true men of God. So closing down the entire churches wouldn't really be a good idea because for me, they should first of all like try to do some research on all the 50 churches, try to know by the food that they bear to understand which church bears God as whether it's a fruit of good deed or that of bad deed. As you should know the differences before taking any action. To see those words into conclusions by condemning the churches, all of that.
So from my own view, I think some of the churches need to be closed down. Reasons being that some of these pastors, they use this church as a money-making organization. Yes. They don't actually preach the word of God. Their focus is on money. And then some of them, they use these churches as a means to have, that is, I can call it a... separating people from their families, that is, we are all worshiping one God, and we have the renowned church, why can't we worship under those renowned God?
My opinion on that, I would lay much emphasis that closing down the churches all together wouldn't really be a good idea because going down to the Bible, which is our basic instruction before leaving this earth, as predefined by some scholars nowadays. But to me, I believe the word and it's through that word that we all are from, and the word itself makes us to understand that they are true prophets and they are true men of God. So closing down the entire churches wouldn't really be a good idea because for me, they should first of all like try to do some research on all the 50 churches, try to know by the food that they bear to understand each church bears God as whether it's a fruit of good deed or that of bad deed. As if you know the differences before taking any action, to see those words into conclusions by condemning the churches, all of that.
This problem is further compounded by what I call subcontractualization of churches. This is done by some of these churches that are authorized. They kind of assimilate the illegal churches and make them prayer cells under their ministry for some financial remuneration. We would, in very strong terms, condemn this and acclaim for once the Minister for Territorial Administration and Decentralization for this pleasant move, hoping that it will not be a failure like that of the year 2013, but that this time around it will succeed and that Christians will no longer be confused as to what church to fellowship in.
Sir Edwin Jimajo, it is time for stock taking as the 2016-2017 academic year approaches. It was to this effect that the Presbyterian Education Authority Teachers Trade Union, PAITU, met at the PN Tambolin campus last Thursday, July 28, 2016. According to the PAITU National President, Afu Stephen, it was an opportunity to evaluate the functioning of the union after 2 years of existence, examine its finances, and adapt its end-of-year evaluation report. In all, the union has appealed for a more healthy relationship between the Presbyterian Authority and PAITU. Tangwe Abraham is the National Vice President of the Presbyterian Education Authority Teachers Trade Union. On the sideline of the meeting, he explained to Foundation Radio the urgency of their reunion and some of the major resolutions arrived at.
Yes, my name is Tangwe Abraham. I am the National Vice President of the Presbyterian Education Authority Teachers Trade Union. And as you can see, we are in an enlarged executive meeting to assess the school year in the Presbyterian Education Authority and to chart a way forward for the system with regards to education. And in fact, we have been involved in brainstorming, and it's good to note that the meeting was attended by the MESAM, Divisional Union of Trade Unions leader, Comrade D. Lawrence, the Executive Secretary of CATU, Comrade Tassang Wilfred, who all encourage us. But it's also worthwhile noting that we have come up with some resolutions, and amongst the many things we examined before going to the resolutions was the end of year report of the schools in the system. We have therefore resolved to look at the weaknesses in the schools running for this year and to do things more positively.
Can you maybe tell us one of the major weaknesses that you noticed during the functioning of institutions run by the PCC last academic year?
Yeah, one of the major weaknesses was that the workers' working condition still remained preoccupying to us, and we think that we need a more relaxed forum to discuss with hierarchy to see how we can chart a way forward in order to improve on the working conditions of the teachers of the system. No, a lot has been done, I can assure you of that, but we are saying that we still need something to be done to get to the minimum standard when it comes to working conditions.
Now, this disparity, should I say complaint, by Christians of the PCC, parents of the PCC, that teachers of the primary school that forms the basis of secondary education, they are not treated as well as those of the secondary education.
They are very correct. I think when we compare the system, because PEA is a system, but when you go within that system and try to diagnose the functioning and working conditions of teachers of the basic sector, there is still a lot that needs to be done, because those of the secondary sector, though they complain, are a bit better off than those of the primary sector. Our preoccupation is that something needs to be done to bring the teachers of the basic sector to the same level like those of the secondary sector. That is true.
Now, are you thinking within your brainstorming of, say, coming out with a harmonized education charter for the Presbyterian Education Authority? I mean that for the basic education sector, for example, there should be a harmonized charter, and for the secondary school sector, there should be a harmonized charter, such that somebody who is teaching in Furawa, PS Furawa, is treated at the same way as somebody who is teaching in PS Tamulu.
That has been our cry as a trade union over the year, and this cry, you know, propelled what you call the leadership of the church, headed by the education secretary, to create what we call a common salary pool that is yet to go operational, so that somebody working in Furawa, like you cited, even though we don't have schools over there, should not feel abandoned, because it is not their fault that they are working where we have difficult conditions. They should be treated equally like those who have that opportunity to be paid round the clock.
Let me ask you another question which may be related. It boils down to having an education fund. I know at one moment there was this clamor for an education fund, a unified, harmonized education fund within the PCC.
Of course, I am saying that is effectively created. It's already created. We are just waiting for it to go operational. I am sure that if I have very good information, I am very confident that someone is already getting into such a fund already, and not too long from now, that fund will go operational and will go a long way to salvage the situation of teachers, whether at the secondary or primary sector.
Now, the major resolutions that you're going to arrive at, or you arrived at this meeting?
The major resolution we've arrived at is looking for means and ways, of course, still calling on hierarchy, headed by our moderator, the Right Reverend Samuel Foba. The need, we are trying to point to him, the need for him and the leadership of Fiatu to sit and see how most of these problems plaguing the educational sector can be handled, because
we realize that we've had a lot of discussions with the education secretary, but most of the things we raise are not within the competence of the education secretary. So we need the intervention of the moderator and other stakeholders of the church to get a headway.
Those in power are not very comfortable with trade unions. Yeah. What's your working relationship with the authorities of the PCC?
Our working relationship has been very cordial, and we cannot overlook the fact that once in a while we are suspected and not treated in a way that is commensurate with what is supposed to obtain. But as of now, they have done their best to listen to us, and we appreciate that.
Trade unions, do you have the feeling that some of you may be victimized, sanctioned by the authorities for?
We've had such indicators, and we want to let them know that we are not fighting hierarchy. We are there to work and help in a quality service delivery for the system. And so hierarchy should never look at us as those fighting them, but should look at us as partners in development. We don't miss any opportunity to make them realize this, and we hope that they will understand and play cool with us.
Now, there is this worry, again, coming from especially Anglophone parents who send their children to mission secondary schools owned by the Presbyterian mission, that the schools have been hijacked or overtaken over by the rich, and especially the Francophone parents.
Their worry is in place, but at our level, we are only advising the hierarchy to see what can be done, because, you know, the schools are supposed to be another evangelizing arm of the church. It was not actually to be what you call an arena for the rich to exploit and educate their own children. And we know that even if we say this and think that the church is exploiting parents or giving advantage to others at the detriment of others, they need that money to run the schools, because we must be honest to ourselves. The government has slashed down subventions that were there to aid and bring in these children from the poor backgrounds. Now that they have slashed subventions by almost, 70%, there is nothing left for the church to do than to look for money to break even. And so we cannot blame the church to an extent. Teachers of the PCC, many do send, but I must be honest with you, those whose salaries do not measure up to anything cannot afford to educate children in some of our schools. But because of the 60% boarding fees that was granted to teachers of the system by the hierarchy, most are trying to send their children now because they have some financial aid from the hierarchy.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
We hope that the authorities of the Presbyterian Church in Cameroon, the PCC, know better than us that you cannot feed the soul without the body. Alain Teff might only be 24 years old, but has met the Queen of England, Queen Elizabeth II, robbed soldiers with world leaders at the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland in 2015, and received numerous international awards. Alain Teff is the co-founder of Gifted Mom, an SMS and voice platform that educates and reminds pregnant women on when to go for their next antenatal checks, and also to alert mothers on when to take their babies for their next vaccines. In a country where maternal and infant mortality is extremely high, the service has greatly increased women's adherence to their antenatal checks and child vaccinations. There are plans to extend it to other African countries. Francine Gwaniba now reports on Gifted Mom.
I'm standing in front of the very noisy and very busy Lakantini Hospital in Douala. Like all government hospitals in this country, it has a big gate and security guards controlling all entrances and exits, so I won't go inside. In March this year, the nation watched in shock and consternation a video of a lady cutting the stomach of her sister open to pull off twins. to save their lives. The children did not survive. Had the deceased 32-year-old Monique Kumate been registered and using the Gifted Mom SMS information service, maybe, just maybe, she'll be alive today. It later emerged she only attended one antenatal consultation during her pregnancy. Gifted Mom co-founder Alain Tev says since creating the service in 2012, the results have been impressive.
We have over 10,000 users in these 34 health centers. In some health centers, we've noticed that we've increased the rate of antenatal care attendance and baby vaccination by up to 68%. And in the next 6 months, by the end of 2016, our target is to reach over 50,000 users. And by 2018, we are looking at over 5 million users across West and Central Africa.
Dr. Agbo Ashu helps answer some of the thousands of questions women send to the service. He gives some of the most common questions they receive.
Most of the time women ask, what should I give to my child as food, for example? And we advise them that the first thing is that you have to give breast milk at least for up to 6 months before you start thinking of giving any other thing to your child. Others ask regarding abdominal pains in pregnancy and bleeding in pregnancy.
Are there some questions that were completely out of the blue, you were not expecting them?
A very popular question which was out of the blue was sex during pregnancy. The question was very frequent, like, am I supposed to have sex during pregnancy?
And how do you answer that one?
Particularly for sex during pregnancy, there are no restrictions. You just have to take the right position and you can have your sex.
Up to 9 months. Up to a day that they are going to deliver.
Yes, you can.
Because of the intimate nature of some questions, anonymity of users is guaranteed. Carol is 4 months pregnant and a Gifted Mom user.
Je reçois environ 2 SMS par semaine.
I receive about 2 SMS messages every week which responds to the development of my pregnancy. They are mostly messages of advice and information. I have asked for help with some complications I have had. Last week, I had some palpitations and also had a lot of waist pain. My stomach felt heavy and I had problems even walking. When I sent an SMS to complete, the doctor replied within 10 minutes. He advised me to see my doctor immediately because the palpitation was not a good sign. For my waist pain, he advised I get a lot of rest, drink a lot of water, and eat very well.
Though still unmarried, most of his friends call Gifted Mom director Alain Tev a gifted dad. He told me the service has a very promising future.
I think the future is very bright. We are starting right now with SMS education for pregnant women and mothers. We believe preventive health education is key in Africa where we don't have enough infrastructure to take care of complications. Our goal is really that every pregnant woman that is pregnant in Cameroon or in other countries where we work receives an SMS and has a safe pregnancy.
Government may have failed in its health policy, reason why individuals have now opted to provide such services. Health is as important as education. 75 billion francs for laptops can also be awarded to health services, for only healthy students can use laptops.
There are people who can walk away from you, and hear me when I tell you this. When people can walk away from you, let them walk. I don't want you to try to walk another person into staying with you, loving you, calling you, caring about you, coming to see you, staying attached to you. I mean, hang up the phone. When people can walk away from you, let them walk. Your destiny is never tied to anybody that left. The Bible said that they came out from us, that it might be made manifest that they were not for us. For had they been of us, no doubt they would have continued with us. People leave because they are not joined to you. And if they are not joined to you, you can't make them stay. let them go. And it doesn't mean that they are a bad person. It just means that their part in the story is over. And you've got to know when people's part in your story is over so that you don't keep trying to raise the dead. You've got to know when it's dead. You've got to know when it's over. Let me tell you something. I've got the gift of goodbye. It's the 10th spiritual gift. I believe in goodbye. It's not that I'm hateful. It's that I'm faithful. And I know whatever God means for me to have, He'll give it to me. And if it takes too much sweat, I don't need it. Stop begging people to stay. Let them go. If you're holding on to something that doesn't belong to you and was never intended for your life, then you need to let it go. If you're holding on to past hurts and pains, let it go. If someone can't treat you right, love you back, and see your worth, let it go. If someone has angered you, let it go. If you're holding on to some thoughts of evil and revenge, let it go. If you're involved in a wrong relationship or addiction, let it go. If you're holding on to a job that no longer meets your needs or talents, let it go. If you have a bad attitude, let it go. If you keep judging others to make yourself feel better, let it go. If you're stuck in the past and God is trying to take you to a new level in Him, let it go. If you're struggling with the healing of a broken relationship, let it go. If you keep trying to help people who won't even try to help themselves, let it go. If you're feeling depressed and stressed, let it go. If there is a particular situation that you are so used to handling yourself and God is saying, take your hands off it, then you need to let it go. Let the past be the past. Forget the former things. God is doing a new thing for you. Let it go. Get right, get left. Think about it and then let it go. The battle is the Lord's. Next, stop and think and appreciate God's power in your life for doing what you know is pleasing to Him. Yes, I love my God. He is my fountain of life and my Savior. He keeps me going day and night. Without Him, I am no one. But with Him, I can do everything. Christ is my strength. This is a simple test. If you love God and you are not ashamed of all the great things that He has done for you, send this to everyone you know. God loves you and watches over you every day.
You are listening to News Extra on Foundation Radio FM 100. I am Mokun Johnny Nelson, anchoring. Whether Hillary Clinton becomes president of the United States of America or not, she is already in the Guinness Book of Records as the first woman to contest for the U.S. top job. She will challenge controversial Republican candidate at the polls come November. He is known as Donald Trump. From heading some of the world's powerful countries to prominent international organizations, are women about to put in place a new world order? Lanza Vela.
Women in positions of power are women who hold an occupation that gives them great authority, influence, and/or responsibility. Historically, power has been distributed among the sexes disparately. Power and powerful positions have most often been associated with men as opposed to women. And as gender equality increases, women hold more and more powerful positions due to policy and social reform. Accurate and proportional representation of women in social systems has been shown to be important to long-lasting success of the system. It has also been proven over time that absence is not merely a sign of disadvantage and disenfranchisement, but the exclusion of women from positions of power also compounds gender stereotypes. but in recent times, many women have been able to break this worn-out dogma and rise to prominent positions of power internationally. Christine Lagarde is one of those that have shelved inferiority and are making it big in the world. Christine Lagarde, the French lawyer and politician, is the managing director of the International Monetary Fund, IMF, a post she has been occupying since 2005. And even before rising to what seems as a pinnacle of her career, Lagarde previously held juicy positions in the French government, including Minister of Economic Affairs, Finance and Employment. She had once been ranked the best finance minister in the Eurozone. Germany's Angela Merkel has also been a reference to women around the world. Her strong political wits that have maintained Germany in a comfortable position in the Eurozone has earned her a huge reputation difficult to write off. In the 2005 election, Merkel narrowly defeated Chancellor Gerhard Schröder, winning by just 3 seats, and after the CDU agreed a coalition deal with the Social Democrats, she was declared Germany's first female chancellor. Merkel is also the first former citizen of the German Democratic Republic to lead the reunited Germany and the first woman to lead Germany since it became a modern nation state in 1871. She was elected to a second term in 2009. Even though her rise to top prominence was circumstantial, Theresa May has become a heavyweight not only in women's circles but a global force. The British PM Theresa was elected Member of Parliament for Maidenhead in May 1997. She has held several positions within Parliament since 1997. She was a member of the Shadow Cabinet from 1999 to 2010 and from 2002 to 2003 was the first female chairman of the Conservative Party. Theresa was appointed Home Secretary in May 2010 and became the longest-serving Conservative Home Secretary for over a century. During this time, she oversaw reductions in crime, reform of the police, and the introduction of the landmark Modern Slavery Act. Following her election as leader of the Conservative Party, Theresa was appointed Prime Minister of the United Kingdom on 13th of July 2016. Susanna Mabel Makora might also become a focal point if her ambition of clinching the UN's top job comes to fruition. She is the current Foreign Minister of Foreign Affairs of Argentina and prior to this current portfolio had held various top positions in the country. She aims at using her diplomatic know-how to get to the top of world's biggest organization. Hillary Clinton could be that one to marvel the world if she finally trudges successfully into the White House. The former First Lady is definitely using the experience tapped from her husband to take the presidency in the US. And should the contest go her way, Clinton would have made brittle history as a woman. She is the one the world is watching at now. Some African women have also adopted this daring spirit to create history for themselves. Liberia's Ellen Johnson Sirleaf stands tall as one of those women that set the pace for others to follow. Her political ingenuity earned her Liberia's top job, and that she became Africa's first female president is indelible and an inspiration many women have benefited from. Why not Samba Diouf Samora of Senegal, who became the first female secretary general of FIFA? And in the legal domain, another African lady has made her mark. Gambia's Bensouda is calling the shots at the International Criminal Court. Her aptitude in legal matters has earned her many awards. Bensouda has been the recipient of the Distinguished ICJ International Jurist Award in 2009. Bensouda was given this award for her contributions to criminal law both at the national and international level. Who can therefore take the risk to argue against the fact that women also are running the world and could even take full command subsequently?
Very incisive report there, Lanze Vela. And if we think that our mothers always sacrifice for us, if we think of what our mothers do to us, then women as leaders may just be mothers. Cameroonians have opted to spend sleepless nights to bask in the splendor of American democracy in practice. Christopher Fogwe, in the following highlights, looks at the maturity of American democracy against its miserable equivalent in Cameroon and Africa.
The developments leading to the selection of Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump as the two main contenders for the presidency of the United States next October have been a textbook demonstration of the maturity and resilience of American democracy and the absence thereof on the African landscape of political dictators. The American presidential primaries, which began almost 2 years ago, demonstrate on a grand scale how well over 300 million people can put into practice the principles of democracy for which Abraham Lincoln, a renowned American president, defined as the government of the people, by the people, for the people. American democracy begins with the idea that government exists to serve the people, unlike the situation in Africa. American democracy is predicated on the principle that the people are sovereign and have the right to freely change the government if it does not serve them justly. It also requires the safeguarding of liberties such as the freedom of exchange of ideas and opinions, and freedom to assemble, to name just those. The American Constitution is the supreme law of the land and stipulates how the executive, the legislative, and judiciary branches of government operate. Other sections of the Constitution discuss the election process, political parties, the law courts, and others. Those of our listeners who have spent sleepless nights savoring the uplifting splendor of American political debates can testify to the veracity of President Obama's declaration in Ghana that what Africa needs is strong institution, not strong men. The entire African political landscape is littered with a plethora of heads of states, some of whom are outright megalomaniacs, and almost all of whom have turned the principles of democracy practiced in America upside down by subjugating the people to subservience to strong power mongers who maintain themselves in power through the manipulation of their constitutions or tyrannical measures. Freedom of assembly is out of the question for those with contrary views to those of the powers that be. Multipartism is a mere facade, given that most states here in Africa are essentially one-party states. Freedom of expression is strictly controlled, and self-censorship and caution are the rules of thumb on those who operate in the media. The vast majority of African states operate more or less like one-party states surrounded by satellite sycophantic pseudo-parties benefiting from occasional crumbs thrown at them by the ruling parties. The idea of independent candidacy for the presidency is not condoned at all, even by the opposition parties, which would rather play second fiddle in the shadows of the ruling party forever than take the chances of having themselves outshined by outsider independent candidates. How long shall it take for our continent to emerge from the forest of jungle politics in order to find a respectable and dignified position among the community of nations emerged politically by adopting full-fledged democracy. Your guess is as good as mine.
Makabe Gertrude Asmak, student on internship, shall be reading the letters we received in our mailbox after this break. Yes, we have these letters. The first coming from Fru Christopher of Funchal Street, who is calling on other parents to keep their purses safe and secured from pickpocketers and robbers, especially during this period.
My dear friends, as a parent, I just thought it wise to warn other parents that as we enter August with all the preparations for Rentrée Scolaire, we would not be the only ones. Pickpockets and scammers will also be doing everything possible to rid us of our money. So please, keep your money very safe and close to you and don't listen to captivating stories from these gangsters, which might lead to you losing your children's future.
And the second letter is from Madame Rose Cheffer. She's writing from My 7 and the cry out is to council officials.
Dear News Extra, I wonder where we are going. Trash cans were put on street corners so that the streets will not be littered with all kinds of mess. Though there were people who disrespected the rule of putting dirt in cans, it still went a long way to at least make the town clean. Now, the city council has removed trash cans and people are not allowed to leave their trash by the road. So what do we do? You even see people using the cover of darkness and dumping their trash in other backyards. Please, we need public trash cans before we all die of pollution, and defaulters should be punished if they misuse it.
And while others are rejoicing with the 500,000 laptops donated by President Paul Biya to university students next academic year, Akum, our Siri from Akum, rather thinks this plan is a misplaced priority.
News Extra, if 500,000 laptops are going to be handed to university students for the 2016-2017 academic year, then what about those who graduated already? More importantly, is every course to be completed by laptop, or do the top officials even know what these students are going to use the laptop for? Cyber criminality or education? That's the question. Either this was not a well thought out plan or just a move to get voters and blind the public's eye with questionable moves.
Awa there from Akum. And this letter just coming into our mailbox, just dropped into our mailbox. And it is from Augustine Puoge Halley. He writes, Dear News Extra, all of last week, we were schooled on techniques to being a better hotel manager and how to be receptive. It was a wonderful workshop, but we failed to meet our goals because of the poor road infrastructure in the Northwest region and Bamenda in particular. I think CONAC should investigate the execution of road contracts in Bamenda. The letter from Augustine Puwege Halley. And keep sending us your letter on our email, radio.foundation@yahoo.com, radio.foundation@yahoo.com. You can also come and drop your letters here at the studio situated at My 6 Ngongwa Mankon. You can also call us or text us on the numbers 672 5 7253-3990 or 6955684800, and the News Extra crew shall be at your service. Wonja Leslie now has News Extra's weekly press review.
We start this week's press review with the Independent Observer. In this My Incisive Pen, the publisher Peter King's Manyong, with the examples of President Paul Biya and his all-time challenger Ni John Frunzi, wonders if it is to the advantage or detriment of a country when leaders listen more to themselves than to others. That is, when a leader is his own chief advisor. The ongoing reorganization of SGF grassroots organs also caught the attention of the Independent Observer. The paper reports that elections of Northwest chairperson for Frunzi's party has been postponed indefinitely. Was it because of lack of a quorum, or that incumbent Honorable John Evaristus was afraid to lose? Get the answer in the Independent Observer. Over to the Median, where we are told 5 students have been expelled from the Yaounde Advanced School of Administration and Magistracy, ENAM. The 3 Cameroonians, including 1 Anglophone from the Northwest region and 2 foreigners, are said to have been caught cheating during their exams. Hope the cleanup starts from the entrance so that we are sure only the competent and intelligent candidates gain admission. The Rambler carries this story of the Bamenda Legal Department and the administration disagreeing over the destruction of about 122 million francs CFA drugs alleged to have been illegally imported. The administration had ordered for its destruction, but the legal department prayed for further investigation. We move over to the English language bi-weekly The Post. Fear grips principals, teachers, as minister dismantles corruption network, writes Joe Dinga-Pefok. According to the paper, recent decision by the Minister of Secondary Education, Jean Ernest Ngale Bibehe, sacking key directors and sub-directors has raised anxiety. It has caused panic within the network of those involved in corrupt practices in that ministry. Let's end this review on a light-hearted mode, thanks to the Guardian Post Daily. Ladies, how can you help your husband out of anger? You know, men are like kids, so be their friend. Always appreciate him than always criticizing, and give to him. Don't withhold from him. That way, your man will be happy and will surely also make you happy. We take the rendezvous next week for what the papers will have to say.
Lanza Vela, our spyglass, is there to evaluate the deeds and misdeeds of people and events in our scoreboard.
In today's edition of the program, we are scoring high the President of the Republic, Paul Biya, for his magnanimity towards the students of higher education in Cameroon, true to his promise to them on the 10th of February 2016, while addressing them on the eve to National Youth Day. President Paul Biya has donated a laptop computer each to higher education students. This largesse of the head of state is expected to help students catch up with the Joneses in an era where everything, including education, is becoming digital, especially those from humble backgrounds who could find it hard getting this gadget. For this untold generosity exhibited towards youths, we score President Biya extremely high. Also making a pass on a scoreboard this week is the national chairman of the Social Democratic Front Party, Ni John Frundi. Against all odds, Frundi set aside the friction he had with one-time SG of his political party, Professor Tazocha Songanyi, to attend the fallen politician's funeral. Few had expected to see the chairman at the farewell ceremony of Professor Tazocha Songanyi, but being an astute politician and a father that he really is, Frundi buried the hatchet and showed up to pay his last respect to Professor. An excellent score for him.
Vela, a snake may be dangerous, but you can clutch on it to save yourself from drowning. Thank you very much. And that last voice of the week round up this program, News Extra, this edition. Dear listeners, you surely missed one darling voice today, that of Sandra Fomujang. She's not feeling fine, and we hope she gets better strength so that she will be part of the crew next week. If you don't make efforts to acquire knowledge, then you will not expect to have it. And if you don't put the knowledge you have to use, you cannot expect to gain anything from it. Same time next week, same frequency, FM 100, same radio, Foundation Radio. God being a helper, I shall still be there. Yours, Mokun Johnny Nelson, accept my blessed regards.